What is up, fools? This is the QTR Podcast. You made it. You guys made it through the day. You made it through the day watching CNBC. You made it through the day watching Fox Business News. You made it through the day watching Donald Trump field questions about the trade agreement. That was a funny press conference. I actually enjoyed watching that today. But the point is, you made it through the day, and you're here with me now. I don't know what that means. Maybe it means your life has hit an all-time low. Maybe you're very happy about it. Could be anything in between. Folks, let's just go back to basics here, okay? There's one thing I want to remind you that I haven't reminded you in a while, and that is I recommend a 2-drink minimum for this podcast. And by recommend, I mean knock a couple back, please. That's what I'm doing. I'm enabling you. I'm an enabler, all right? So if you need a couple minutes to do that, just pause the podcast, handle that business, then come back. But I do recommend a 2-drink minimum, and I haven't said that in a while. And these things are fucking important, so I want to get that out there. That's number one. Number two, by the way, I'm not an investment advisor. Do I sound like an investment advisor, or do I sound more like somebody you would hear mumbling on drunk at an airport bar somewhere? I'm not an investment advisor. I hold no licenses. Don't listen to anything that I say. It's certainly not investment advice. We're just here shooting the shit. Just a couple of people, me and you, that seem to think the entire world has lost its fucking mind and we're the only two people left on Earth that get it. We're probably wrong, by the way, but it's nice to be here commiserating and sharing our cognitive dissonance together. That's number two. Number three is this episode of the QTR Podcast, like all my episodes, is brought to you by my Patreons. My Patreons are a group of badass motherfuckers that choose to donate. If you don't know what Patreon is, I fucked that whole thing up. Jesus Christ. Patreon is a service that allows you to donate a recurring amount to the QTR Podcast on a monthly basis. You can make it as little or as much as you want. Patreon helps pay for some of the expenses of running the podcast. It keeps it advertisement free, and it is strictly on a donation basis. So the podcast is always going to be free. Those who choose to become Patreons, I am super thankful for. I am very grateful for. I send everybody an email as soon as I get their Patreon notification just to remind them how thankful I am for it, because it's something that they don't have to do. The content's going to be here. I'm going to be sitting here ranting into a microphone probably until the day that I die. And for better or for worse, I will be punting those out until the annals of internet history, or as my friend Antoine called it when he was reading it one time, the annals of history. We had to correct him on that. But we'll be punting this out into the annals of internet history, regardless of whether there are Patreons or not. It's just a lot easier when there are. And I want to let you guys know that I really appreciate that shit. Do want to shout out a couple of my quick newest Patreons. EndTheFed.org is in the house. I guess the entire organization made a donation. I appreciate you guys. I'm right there with you, by the way. John Fitzgerald, Jeff Soli, Zahn, Carlos Enrique, Agnes Dobo, Franz Xavier Hubert. I don't know. I think that's French. I'm going to guess French-Canadian there. Matthew Cliat, Adam DeMoy, Jeffrey Coid, Cooper, well, I'm really fucking him up this morning. God, if you got a nice name like John Smith, can you send in a Patreon, please, so it's not as difficult for me? I don't have to go through this whole list like I'm reading fucking hieroglyphics. Cooper Sinclair, Massimo Garrado, I think I got most of you guys already in the last episode, but I appreciate you guys very much. And guys like Max Mulvihill's been down for a long time, Jesse Collins, C.D. Payne, my homie Russ Valenti, Brendan Egan. I mean, I feel like I shout out. I try to go through the whole list, but I feel like I shout out the same guys all the time. Let me just pick one more that I don't. Here's one. David West McKisson. I don't even think I've ever said your name before, but thank you very much for being a Patreon. And if you are a Patreon, you get little posts on my Patreon website that let you know what guests are coming up, and you can submit questions and all other kinds of happy horse shit. So today on this podcast, which, by the way, is not a Tesla-exclusive podcast, even though sometimes it sounds like it, we're going to be talking about the one thing that I believe the entire stock market has missed about Elon Musk's settlement with the SEC. So no sooner did I make my episode a couple of days ago talking about the SEC suing Elon Musk for fraud as it relates to his early August funding secured tweets. And on that podcast, I suggested they would probably settle. Of course, it took them a day to do that. But they did, in fact, settle. It was announced over the weekend. And the terms of the settlement were a 3-year bar as chairman of the company, though Musk can still stay in the CEO role. The company needed to appoint 2 new independent directors. Hi, I'm new here. My name's Chris. 2 new independent directors. That means 2 people that are not Kimball Musk on the board of directors. And Musk had to pay some type of fine that he guaranteed made up for multiples of in the rise in Tesla's stock price today. So let's talk about the very first thing. Actually, let's talk about the positives first, right? If you're a bull, here's why you like the settlement. It gets this particular investigation out of the way, which is fantastic. I think that's probably helping stoke the euphoria a little bit and the buying today, which has the stock back, I think, up almost 20% again. So that's good news if you're a long. If you're a long and you consider Elon Musk to be your biggest asset, it is a good thing that he is CEO of the company still. And actually, it can be looked, and also another good thing, sorry, Jesus, my mind is mush right now. Another good thing is that the fine didn't cost much money. Not that anybody is really concerned with Elon Musk having to cut a personal check, but it was a relatively, I think the fine went up from when he had a chance to settle to begin with, but it was still an immaterial amount of money for him. So that was good news for the longs. And also good news for the longs is that 2 independent board members now need to come in. And let's start with that because that can dovetail into being a good thing or a bad thing, just like Musk remaining in the CEO role. It can be a good thing because the company's corporate governance is atrocious, in my opinion. It has been absolutely atrocious, and a perfect example that I brought up many times, and I hate repeating myself, is that after the Vern Unsworth deal, the board should have stepped in and said to Elon Musk, you can't use Twitter anymore, or all your tweets have to be pre-approved. It's that simple. They should have just said that. That's just a microcosm of how bad the corporate governance has been at the company, in my opinion. So bringing in 2 independent board of directors, again, these are 2 people that are not going to be chummy with Elon Musk. They're not going to be chummy with Kimball Musk, hopefully. They're not family members. They're not cousins. They are hopefully going to be actual independent directors. Bringing in 2 sensible-minded individuals that have a background in the capital markets or in Wall Street, I think could be an asset to the company. I think it'll help shore up corporate governance. I think it will help the credibility of the company look better. And if you remember, this is what bulls like Gene Munster were asking for a couple of weeks ago when he wrote that open letter that basically said, "Dear Elon, just stop fucking talking. Love, Gene Munster." You know, one of the things that he asked for was to overhaul the board. And I agreed with him completely because the board has shown to me that they're not interested in impartially, you know, keeping everybody in check here. It looks to me, as I've said many times, that the board is beholden to Elon Musk instead of the other way around. So if you're a long investor, you have that to look forward to. The stock was up, which in, you know, this type of precarious financial situation is always kind of good news. Where they may have to use the stock as currency, or the stock is approaching a level where it can be used to convert into and take care of some debt. So I think those are all good things from the long side. Now, let's talk about those things from the short side, and then let me talk about the one thing that I think everybody's missing that's of real importance here. From the short side, you could make the same arguments, which is that Musk has been an irresponsible leader. I know many people on the short side are betting against this company, not only because its financial situation is precarious, but also because they think Musk is an irresponsible chief executive officer. It's that simple. So while taking him off the board of directors is a good step, I know some short sellers, and myself included, would argue that Elon still remaining in any type of position of power or in the C-suite may not be the worst thing in the world if you're short the stock, because he has a history, in my opinion, of overpromising, underdelivering, and saying things that have created liabilities for him in the company where there normally wouldn't have been liabilities. So having Musk stay on as CEO, I don't think is the worst thing in the world for short sellers. I also think that there's a very small chance that the SEC is leaving him on as CEO in order to be able to possibly, and this is all just my opinion, and I think this is a very, very small chance, but it did cross my mind that they might be leaving him in as CEO so that if the thing comes crashing down, he'll be the guy that'll be really easy to point to. And by crashing down, you know, I mean whether it's regard to the financials drying up or the company winding up in some other type of regulatory trouble. But I find it interesting that they're okay with him remaining as CEO. I think taking him off the board and bringing in two independent directors is a very good step for the SEC. And also, like I told, I was interviewed by Vice today. I think they're going to do something tomorrow. But I told the guy on Vice that the fact that the SEC was able to turn around and put this suit, file this suit in 2 days, as Montana Skeptic on the last podcast said, talks to the urgency of how egregious I think they thought this action was. So Elon staying on may not be the worst thing in the world. Now let's talk about the directors coming on, okay? If you're bringing on two independent directors and you have nothing to hide, I think that's a great thing. I do. I think net-net, that becomes a positive. If the board of directors has been sycophants to Musk, then bringing on two additional outside board members, if they've been sycophants just because they're in love with him and because they think he can do no wrong, then that's fine. I think net-net, it'll be a good thing that they bring on two new board members because that'll just help with governance. And if there's no, you know, if there's nothing that's been swept under the rug and there's no skeletons in the closet, then I think you only have good stuff to gain from bringing on two new board members. Let's talk about another scenario, which might be that the board of directors has maybe been involuntarily sycophantic towards Musk because maybe there are some things going on that they don't want to air out. And I don't know what that means, and I don't know what I could be referring to, but there is, in my opinion, a small chance that bringing on two truly independent directors would lead to a line of questioning, whether it's just between the board and Musk or whether it's at board meetings, that might start to move toward some things that the current board and the current C-suite might not want to talk about. Now, that's all just speculation. I mean, I'm basing it on what I've seen of the company's corporate governance so far and the fact that so many executives have chosen to leave the company over the last couple of years. You know, 50, 60 C-suite executives and VPs have left the company. So why are they leaving? Maybe they're leaving because of morale purposes, but maybe they're leaving because they found out some shit they don't want to know. Maybe. It's possible. Might not be true. Might be speculation, but it's possible. So if you're on the short side, I think what you're looking for is you're looking for two independent directors that have substantial experience and pedigree in the industry who also have board experience and people who know if somehow they fall ass backwards into some type of huge problem. Maybe they're looking at the numbers one day and somebody on the audit committee notices something, or maybe they notice some behavior that's going on in the C-suite that shouldn't be. I don't know. These are all just examples I'm creating out of thin air. None of these are proven, and none of these are, you know, actual, but these are all hypotheticals. But maybe something like that happens, and if you have a board member who has a history of being on boards and understands the liability of being a board member, which I don't think their current board understands, I don't think Kimball Musk understands that he could be held personally liable for what happens and his failure to govern and what comes of the decisions that the board makes. But if a real player rolls in that's been on a board in the past, or more than one board in the past, and understands the liability of taking on such a position, I think that's a good thing for shorts. Because there's a chance that if that person finds out some shit they don't want to know, all they're going to be thinking is cover my own ass. And if you're on the board, that's what you should be thinking. You should not be thinking about covering Elon's ass. because people on the board can be sued personally. So maybe we get a situation where they bring in a professional, they bring in somebody with board experience, they bring in a couple of, like somebody recommended today, bring in Alan Mulally from Ford. I think that's a great idea. I don't understand why they wouldn't bring in somebody like that. That's, if they did that, I think that would be a good idea. I would compliment them on that move. Great idea. He's an industry veteran, did a great job at Ford, knows what he's doing, probably would have said something when Musk called Vern Unsworth a pedo the first time. Probably would have said, hey guys, why don't we have a fucking meeting, huh? I mean, you see this, I see this. What are we going to do, sit around and not talk about it? It's like the CFO after the complaint alleges that Musk put that tweet out, and the CFO, instead of sending him a message saying, I'm the chief financial officer, what the fuck are you talking about? He's like, hey, maybe we could help you draft a blog post to better explain this nonsense you just put out. I mean, shit. If you're the CFO and your CEO goes out unprovoked and unannounced and without telling you that he's going to put out something that makes a statement that the company might be bought out, and you don't know about it, what kind of working relationship is that? What kind of C-suite is that? That might lend a little bit of an air to a visibility as to why some of these people are leaving. Because if things at the company work in a fashion where Musk just acts and then the company has to respond and he's not pre-clearing this stuff, he doesn't have to clear everything with the council, but surely any executive anywhere would tell you that if you're going to tweet out a potential go private deal, you would want to talk to your CFO about that. Maybe just call him first. Hey, Deepak, I'm thinking about putting something out about the go private deal, about the Saudi shit. But everything I read and all of the reporting that was done after it leads me to believe that he didn't tell anybody about it. He just fired first and asked questions later. And that's the same impression that I get from him with regard to a lot of the company targets. I think he just fires them out there and then scrambles to try and meet his guidance that he didn't think out to begin with. And I think it's done a number on his credibility. I think this quarter's numbers will be interesting. I mean, let's think about this. So far this quarter, everybody is, all of the estimates, I read an article today on Zero Hedge, said all of the estimates for production and deliveries for this quarter of the Model 3 are between 47,000, I think, and like 55,000. And that's for productions and deliveries, but they're all pretty much in that spectrum. And I think on the high end of that spectrum, that equates to something like 4,100 vehicles per week. 4,100 Model 3s per week. So here's a question. When did we lose sight of the 5,000 vehicle per week goal that we talked about in the middle of the summer that was heavily under the microscope for the first half of this year? Talked about and talked about and talked about like it was going to be the key to achieving profitability. But nobody's mentioned it since then. And then all of a sudden these analysts and bloggers are all coming out with their targets. If, you know, Electric came out with an article today. Wow, this is great. Supposedly, they made 53,000 Model 3s this quarter. Well, is it really great? Because it's well underneath their 5,000 Model 3 per week goal that everybody was clamoring about 2 months ago. I mean, how soon do we forget, folks? And that brings me to my main point of this podcast, which is something I tweeted about after I saw the settlement, and one thing that I think the market has overlooked, and I think long investors will continue to overlook, and that's very simple, which is it's been reported that the SEC has an entire second investigation ongoing into Tesla. So let's first address the people who were quote-unquote excited about the lawsuit against Musk because it didn't name Tesla as a company. This might be a situation where Tesla gets named as a company in a suit. We'll have to see. Not saying it's going to happen, and I'm not saying it won't happen. But what I'm saying is, when The funding secured investigation was reported. It was reported at the very same time that there was already an ongoing SEC investigation into the company. And that has been forgotten about. And that is ongoing. You know, when Musk settled in relation to this funding secured bullshit, he wasn't settling these other claims. He wasn't settling on behalf of the company for this previous investigation. The legacy investigation is supposedly based around the company's Model 3 production numbers. There had been lawsuits in the past that alleged that Elon Musk knew he wasn't going to be able to meet certain targets, but went out and set them anyway. That's just an allegation at this point. I think those are, that lawsuit in particular is still being litigated. But there's also the notion of when the company did have their first week where they came out and they said that they had made 5,000 Model 3s over the course of the week. That was some point this summer. And they filed in an 8K that they had made 5,200 or 5,300 cars or whatever the hell it was. And then 2 weeks later, Lynette Lopez is at Business Insider reports, citing company documents, that the company had to rework something like more than 80% of those vehicles as they rolled off the line. Hence, I think, explaining the term factory gated that everybody was trying to figure out what the fuck that meant when it came out. Of course, GM, Ford, they don't use these nonsense terms. But are you allowed to put into an SEC filing and tell the world that you factory gated 5,200 cars this week, or you produced 5,200 cars this week, or whatever they said, really giving the public the idea that you have made your 5,000 Model 3 per week goal, when 80% of those cars needed to be turned around and reworked? And it's not like we're not seeing circumstantial evidence of this too. Because as Montana Skeptic said on my last podcast, there's a lot of evidence. People on Twitter, people on Tesla Motor Club's forum, they're getting two different colors of car. They're getting cars that have bumpers that fall off. Even yesterday, that photograph that was posted on Twitter that I put out by one of the guys did a flyover of the Fremont factory. I mean, it looks like there's just a stack of bumpers sitting outside. The point is, are you allowed to come out and say that if more than 80% of the cars needed to be reworked, assuming all things are accurate? And that is, my guess, one of the additional things that the SEC is looking into. And that, in my guess, is probably a little bit more comprehensive than this funding secured thing, which was an open and shut enough case to get it done in 2 months, which for the SEC, who probably has a lot of work and probably has limited resources, a very quick turnaround time. So I think the one thing that people are missing is that they're not out of the woods with the SEC yet. They might be, but they might not be. So the way that the press is covering it and the way that long investors are posting about it on Twitter is that the clouds have lifted and Elon Musk is going to remain CEO and the SEC has gone away. And that's just not the case if this reporting about the second investigation is accurate, which I have no reason to believe that it isn't. On top of that, you still have the Department of Justice, which is supposed to be or reportedly investigating the company as well. And then on top of that, you have a quarter now where Musk sends out an email over the weekend stating that the company is, quote, very close to being profitable. And you basically just had a quarter where all hands were on deck. If they can't push it over the profitability finish line here, and I think to some degree there's some showmanship there. If I had to guess, I would say that they're going to be profitable, and they're probably going to post numbers that people weren't expecting, probably better than expected. But just remember this, if they don't, and even if they do, think of what they've done this quarter to get there. All right, Montana Skeptic talks about, well, they'll blow out the ZEV credits. Well, the accounts payable are stacking up, whatever. They have customers volunteering at their delivery centers. they are relying on the, you know, what Musk would call the help of their supporters, what I would call free labor. They're relying on that to reach their goal this quarter. They're holding pickup events where people go pick their car up at Fremont. There's been reports of them offering incentives for people to take cars off the lot. They've been sending out emails to select reservation holders telling them that some local vehicles were available if they wanted to switch and they wanted to go pick up a different vehicle they could drive it home today. And then conversely, you have people that have reserved and been told that their car would be ready for pickup and it hasn't been yet. On top of all of that, they're only selling the highest margin Model 3s right now. So think about this. With all that being said, if they can't push it over the finish line here, when are they going to be able to do it? I mean, I guess your only hope as a long investor, if they, even if they post a small profit, is that posting a small profit will indicate to the market that they can consistently do it, which I don't think that they can, and that hopefully it would bolster the equity price enough to be able to go out and sell a large chunk of it and capitalize the business again. Because they have some problems that need to be dealt with. They have debt. They have payables. I mean, I think they have a working capital problem. So let's not just talk about the problems of functioning as a business and delivering vehicles to people that are supposed to get them and maybe demand starting to get squishy at this point, which you think it might be, especially if they're blowing through that Model 3 backlog just to make this quarter. I mean, think about this. They had only produced something like 40 or 50,000 Model 3s in total prior to this quarter, and they're going to basically try to double that over the course of the quarter. So you know they're cutting into their backlog. And you have to assume demand has tapered a little bit or will start to taper a little bit. And if that's the case, I mean, I guess if you're Tesla, all you hope for is you hope for one little moment of glory where you could go out and sell a whack of stock maybe at 360 or 350. I mean, but who knows if they can even do that with this second reported SEC investigation that's ongoing. So we're going to have to see where this goes from here. The next thing that's going to happen is I'm guessing we'll get a delivery number or a production number for the Model 3 at some point, you know, over the next day or two. Although Electric came out today and they said 53,000, I think, Model 3s produced for the quarter. I'm guessing we'll get an official statement from the company. And then the much-coveted earnings release. And then I think at that point, it becomes a question of whether or not they can do it again. I mean, I'll tell you what both sides of the aisle are going to say. Long investors, let's say they come out and they turn a profit. Long investors are going to say, this is it. It's a profitable company. We've reached the promised land, like Elon Musk said in his email to employees, you know, epic proportions or whatever. I mean, there's a lot of companies out there that have been turning profits for decades. So I don't know how epic it is to turn a profit for one quarter, but okay. I'll give you credit where it's due. You turn a profit, you turn a profit. So the longs are going to say, you know, they've reached this tremendous milestone, and this is an indication that the company is going to be able to function independent of doing capital raises for as long as they want. Of course, they're going to have to do capital raises for capital expense, or CapEx rather, expenses going forward. They're just going to need to fucking raise money. They're going to need to raise money for factories. They're going to need to raise money for the Tesla Semi. They're going to need to raise money for the Model Y. They're going to have to raise money regardless. But if they can do it on top of the guise of, hey, you know, we're kind of a profitable company now, I guess the longs feel like they would probably have some ammunition there. And the shorts are going to say there's no way they can do it again. If they turn a profit this quarter, and I was on the short side of this bet, what I would be arguing is this good news is kind of already baked in. They promised that they were going to do this, and they did. And now, what's going on for Q4? They going to be able to do it again? I mean, that's the thing about Wall Street. It's brutal. You turn a profit, all of a sudden, all eyes are on the next quarter. So are they going to be able to keep up this blistering pace all the way into next quarter? And as they start to, again, run through all the high-margin Model 3 sales and now start the ASP of the Model 3 starts to come down a little bit? I don't know if they can do it. But certainly, I think the one thing that everybody has ignored that's worth refocusing on is the fact that the SEC's work may not be done. This ban as chairman and fine and bringing on the two independent directors might be part of a two-pronged plan that the enforcement division have. Who knows? Who knows? But for now, hey, stock was up $45 today or whatever. Longs win the day, all right? I'll give it to you guys today. The longs, they won the day. If you're a long, by the way, if you're a long investor, you made it this far into the podcast, just fucking congratulations for listening. It's great that you have an open mind enough to listen through all the way through this podcast. But I'll tell you, you won the day today. But guarantee you, you go ask a guy like Chainos, you go ask a guy like Mark Spiegel, and you ask somebody like myself, I mean, we're going to tell you the same thing that the longs are going to tell you, which is, this is not a one-day investment. Okay, this is whether or not they're going to be able to be sustainable over the course of the long term. And I think Tesla to do it, they need to find some dumb money somewhere. It's out there. Trust me, like Montana Skeptic said on the Hidden Forces podcast, there's definitely tons of dumb money out there. Whether or not Tesla can get some to shore up its business remains to be seen. But it's possible. But I still find it more likely than not. Rising interest rate environment, company with significant amount of debt, inability to consistently generate cash, possibly heading toward a broader market recession. I mean, God help these guys if that happens. I still think it's more likely than not. I'm convinced that I would want to be on the short side of this bet. But again, not financial advice. Not advice at all. Anyways, that's my 2 cents for today. All right, I'll be back later this week. Got a bunch of awesome shit going on. Appreciate you guys for listening, especially again, quick shout out to my patrons. You guys are fucking great, man. Joel Case, Kevin Clay, Carl Nixon, Roland Meyer, Justine Bone. I appreciate you guys. You know, as I said earlier, my Patreon is a donation service. You don't have to do it. You're going to get the content anyways. So if you guys go out of your way to do that, I really appreciate that shit. All right. I will see you later this week. Peace.